Happy Halloween, listeners. Thank you all for your endless support and tuning in to this true crime and paranormal podcast, as it truly means the world to me. I love being able to share these cases and tales through my own research. Some of you may be aware that I live in New York City, and with that said, not long prior to this recording, my partner and I had the opportunity to travel to the small town of Sleepy Hollow, New York, where I had the chance to learn a lot about the town and how this quaint little town came to become universally known for the short story written by 19th century writer Washington Irving, known as The Legend of Sleepy Hollow. I figure what better way to celebrate the holiday of All Hallows Eve than sharing with you all the origin of Sleepy Hollow and the chilling, infamous legend of the Headless Horseman. I'm your host, Kendall Hudson, and this is When the Light Goes Out. A very notable short story writer, biographer, historian, and diplomat by the name of Washington Irving was born on April 3rd of 1783 to Scottish parents William Irving Sr. and Sarah Saunders. The parents of Washington had 11 children, although lost 3 sons at the age of infancy. The family was not super wealthy, but belonged to the merchant class in Manhattan, New York, which involved lots of buying, selling, and trading goods for profit. Washington being born the same week, New Yorkers had learned that the British ceasefire ended the American Revolution in 1783, and Washington's mother, Sarah, had named him after the then-not-yet-president George Washington, later meeting George Washington himself at the age of 8 prior to George's inauguration in 1789. Many of the Irving brothers would go on to become New York merchants, but Washington knew that this wasn't the life for him. He wanted to pursue a career in writing. Growing up, his parents always read him Irish and Scottish folktales and short stories that really fascinated him at a young age. Irving was never a student interested in learning and often insisted shifting his focus on fictional tales and would even sneak out of his home to see theater shows. But then, the year of 1798 would come when New York would encounter its 4th yellow fever outbreak, leaving Irving's parents no choice but to send young Irving to stay with a friend out of the way of the spread of the yellow fever outbreak to a small town off the coast of the Hudson River by the name of Tarrytown. Here, Irving would be exposed to the Dutch livelihood and an abundance of local ghost stories that Tarrytown residents would often share. Further fascinated by the art of storytelling, Irving would begin writing letters to the New York Morning Chronicle throughout his late teens, submitting columns about the rich social and theater scene that Tarrytown had. Irving also often wrote to his family members, which all reports suggest that the Irving family was very supportive of Washington's love for wanting to write, though his brothers grew a little worried that he was becoming too set in his life in Tarrytown, so would pay his way to explore Europe for the sake of the younger brother's social development. So Irving would tour Europe from 1804 to 1806, bringing an exceptional number of skills back to New York City. He began studying law and would create many satirical political entries in magazines across New York. He even gave New York the nickname Gotham City, which stemmed from an old word in Old Anglo-Saxon meaning goat's town. Old European folktales will often make the word Gotham or goat's town to mean a village of simple-minded fools, most likely being that the goat would be seen as a foolish or dumb animal. In 1809, Irving would finally publish one of the most popular books, A History of New York, under a fake name known as Diedrich Knickerbocker, that mysteriously gone missing as a form of satire in his own response to mourning his late fiancée, 17-year-old Matilda Hoffman. and his recent choice in bad investments, to which New York citizens would really believe that this fake author, Dietrich Knickerbocker, had actually gone missing, making his work even more popular. Years later, in 1817, with no job or work published, would lead Irving unable to help financially support his family's firm, resulting in bankruptcy, bringing undesire to live in America any longer, returning to Europe for the next 2 years where he would continue writing short stories. In one night, Irving would compose a short story that he named Rip Van Winkle while living with his sister Sarah in Birmingham, England, and in 1819, Irving would send the short story of Rip Van Winkle, including a number of other short stories, to his brother Ebenezer that was living in New York to be published as a collection of short stories under another pseudonym titled The Sketchbook of Geoffrey Crayon, often known as The Sketchbook. The unprecedented success of this collection of short stories would become so successful he'd write 7 more installments of short stories, with the same title being The Sketchbook of Geoffrey Crayon. Each installment became more successful than the last, but what readers truly loved most was the short story of Rip Van Winkle and one of his best pieces of work, The Legend of Sleepy Hollow. After 17 years in Europe, Irving returned to New York in 1832, and the same year worked with several successful politicians, but wasn't happy with the income that came with accompanying these political men, so turned back to writing as an extra form of income. He once again flourished in his writing and returned to Tarrytown in 1835, where he bought a cottage he found neglected and abandoned that sat on the Tarrytown riverfront facing the Hudson River. He would renovate this house and in 1841 named the plot of land Sunnyside and used his home as his central point for his writing. In Irving's final years, he had spent some time in Spain, where he would be appointed United States Minister to Spain by President John Tyler in 1842, returning to Sunnyside to write more publications, and 8 months after publishing the 5th volume of George Washington's biography on November 28, 1859, Washington Irving would die of a heart attack in his bedroom at the 10-acre historic land of Sunnyside in Tarrytown, New York. In December of 1996, North Tarrytown would officially be renamed Sleepy Hollow. Washington Irving's name would go on to impact American and European culture and still to this day, with the nickname Irving gave New York City being Gotham, used in popular modern context, the pseudonym of Dietrich Knickerbocker being equated to the New York NBA team, the New York Knicks, and even being an inspiration for common storytellers such as Edgar Allan Poe. Although one big reason we are here today is to look deeper into the folklore Washington Irving wrote all those years ago, The Legend of Sleepy Hollow. For those that may not be aware of this tale, the tale is set in the year 1790. The main character is a skinny, lanky, and very superstitious schoolteacher, as the story calls him, a schoolmaster named Ichabod Crane, from Connecticut, who one day had walked into a small valley of Sleepy Hollow, New York, seeking work and shelter. He developed a reputation with his brilliance and had lots of pride in his teachings and much care for the young students he would teach at an old schoolhouse. Although he kept his students in check, the students strongly respected Mr. Crane. He would play games with some of his students to adapt a better connection with them, and even walk the younger, much smaller female students home to ensure their safety. Even though he cared immensely for his students, he had eyes for the maidens of the students, but knew that he needed to keep the families of these students in good graces, as he already struggled to support and feed himself on a day-to-day basis. Crane was depicted to be as thin as a scarecrow, but loved to eat. With thanks of his teachings and the loving connection he had for his students, many of the village families would feed and lodge Crane. He would go from home to home, week by week, being housed, and the village ultimately adored Crane and found him to be quite charming, and were willing to pay him accordingly for any extra farm work or help around the houses that he could offer. He'd sing hymns for extra cash at church and would swoon all the maidens for having intellects most of the village men didn't have. For this, many village men despised Crane but knew how much he brought to the townspeople, so often never paid him much mind. While Crane was very wise and intelligent, he also was very gullible and naive. He would be told tall tales and take every word with seriousness and read himself scary stories until the sun went down, able to find truth in everything he read. When he walked down dark roads back to the farmhouses he'd stay at, he'd be on edge, flitching at the hoo of an owl and the trembling at the branches that creaked, sounding like ghosts all around him. Even the sight of a beetle would mean that he had been struck by the witch's token. So in order to bring himself to ease, he would sing hymns to himself. On some evenings, he would help the older maidens of Sleepy Hollow, and they'd tell him ghost stories about the haunted fields, haunted brooks, haunted houses, and haunted bridges around the grim and eerily quiet town. He listened especially to the tale the maidens shared about Sleepy Hollow's headless horseman. In return, he would tell them stories about witchcraft and superstition, though this commonly only intensified his walks back home, always looking over his shoulder for the headless horseman he continuously hear about. Although this was an ongoing fear at night, during the day, Crane fell more and more in love with one of his older music students, 18-year-old Katrina von Tassel. She was the daughter and only child of a wealthy farmer, to which her beauty and inheritance made her well known around town. She would be depicted as a flirt and love to dress up to enhance her charm. Already swooning over Katrina, Crane also fell in awe of her father's estate. Everything on the property was bright, happy, and well-maintained, overlooking the Hudson. Not only, but as Crane would often help the Van Tassel family, he would thirst over the large feasts of food they indulge in each day. Crane would think over and over how he'd be able to gain the affection of Katrina von Tassel, and one day, live in the mansion made standing with some of the largest pillars he had ever seen. The only problem was, every other eligible bachelor equally swooned at the sight of Katrina, and made Crane look to be one of the last men Katrina would ever consider to wed. One of the bachelors that stood at the top of the totem pole would be a young man named Bron Van Brute. He is described as a burly, strong, double-jointed, well-dressed, handsome young man with dark curly hair, famous for his strength and horseback riding skills. With the attention that Bron Van Brute and his group of friends brought to the functions, it would often be hard for Katrina to look the other way. While he was a bit of an aggressive jokester, Katrina never dismissed his efforts to swoon over her, and other townsmen knew their chances stood limited against Van Brute. Although one man in Sleepy Hollow knew they would not be discouraged, and that was Ichabod Crane. While Crane stood as the town's only music teacher, he tried his chances while visiting the home of the Van Tassels. One evening, Ichabod and Katrina had been walking side by side around the Van Tassel home, and Ichabod would try his chances at Katrina. At the same time, Brom had seen the attempt Ichabod had made towards Katrina and knew he had a rival in the midst. While Brom knew he would settle this with a fair combat, Ichabod stayed clear of involving himself in any fight with Brom, so Brom would begin playing practical jokes on his rival. Brom and his Rough Riders would smoke out his music school by stopping up the chimney. At night, they turn everything upside down, having Ichabod believing witches held meetings there, and even worse, Brom would ridicule Ichabod whenever he'd be around Katrina, and this persisted for a while. One autumn morning, while Ichabod's students had their heads in their books, whispering quietly amongst themselves, a servant of the Van Tassels had delivered an invitation to Ichabod, inviting him to a party that same evening at their large estate. Excited, Ichabod quickly finished up the lesson for that day and let the kids be released early. Wasting no time, Ichabod rushed home to get ready for the night of festivities at the Van Tassel home, elated to see Katrina. Ichabod borrowed the horse of the farmer he had been staying with, which had been described as a broken-down plow horse that was gaunt and shaggy with a tangled and knotted tail. One eye was blind and frothy, while the other had a red gleam. As his horse had jogged on, Ichabod's arms flapped like wings all the way to the manor. It was evening when Ichabod had arrived. Everyone had been dressed in their best outfits, but one that stood out was that of Bronwyn Brute, who had rode in on his big and domineering horse, Daredevil. Uninterested in giving Bron much attention, Ichabod gazed over the table, filled of sweet, short, and ginger cakes matched with apple pies, peach pies, and pumpkin pies. Adjacent were tables of ham, smoked beef, preserved plums, and broiled fish with roasted chicken. Ichabod sat and ate away at the food that sat free to the invited and chuckled as he thought about the feeling of one day being a member of such a wealthy family. Not long after, dancing had commenced and everyone was having a great time. Ichabod got to dance with Katrina and she smiled at him with soft eyes. He couldn't help but notice Brom sitting in the corner alone, brooding jealously. Following after dancing, the invited circled around, sharing stories of war, and soon after led several spooky tales of things that go bump in the night around Sleepy Hollow. One was of the weird and old wailing of a tree that sat near where a major had vanished, and they spoke of the woman in white that shrieked on winter nights before a storm, although most of the stories told centered around the infamous Headless Horseman. They had claimed that he had been heard more often recently galloping on his black horse near the church and cemetery that lie beside it. They shared a story about old Bauer who never believed in supernatural, though one dark evening he had encountered a horseman willing to let him hitch a ride, and as they galloped through the path, they passed over a bridge when the horseman's body had become ghoulish with no head and had thrown old Bauer over the bridge into the river below. Brom had chimed in sharing his encounter with the same horseman that had offered to race him. And as Brom was winning with his horse Daredevil, he passed over the bridge, and when he bolted over the bridge, the Headless Horseman vanished in a flash of fire. After sitting in the complete darkness and telling of these ghost stories, the party began to disperse and soon the manor fell silent, only leaving Ichabod to be waiting to speak with Katrina. Unaware of what their conversation had been about, Ichabod had left the house sad and discouraged to what Katrina had shared with him. He felt played, and now gloomy and crestfallen, Ichabod rode his equally sad steed on the long trip back home. It was the witching hour, and the only sign of life around him were the sound of crickets and the occasional croak of a frog nearby. The stories of ghosts and goblins now made room in Ichabod's head where the sad disappointment of his conversation with Katrina had been. Ichabod looked up as the clouds covered the sky, only making it darker and darker. He had never felt so alone, and now to make matters worse, he had been approaching the very spot where the encounters of the horsemen had come from. The tall, eerie tree where townsfolk spoke about the disappearance of a major lied ahead of him, and as the horse crept closer and closer, Ichabod began to whistle to distract himself from his fear. But after staring at the tree, he could have sworn he thought he had seen something white hanging from it. Looking closer, he had noticed it was where lightning had struck the tree, revealing its white wood. Safely passing the tree, Ichabod chuckled to himself and kept going forward. Nature continued to play tricks on Ichabod, but he didn't let it fool him. As Ichabod had made it this far, he took caution. He began riding the horse toward a small wooden bridge when Ichabod had heard a faint sound of splashing coming from the river. He looked over his shoulder when in the grove he saw a shadow of something huge and misshapen waiting for Ichabod to make his next move. Ichabod was instantly struck with fear and felt every hair on the back of his neck rise. And in the act of courage, he muttered, "Who are you?" But there was no reply. More agitated, he repeated himself, but still no answer. Ichabod had shut his eyes and began humming hymns when the figure had now joined Ichabod on the road. When he had seen what was a very large black horse with hardly any soul in its eyes, standing as the man on the horse sat only visible as a shadow. Ignoring the entity on the path, Ichabod let the horse continue, but behind him it was as if the stranger had been mirroring the pace in which Ichabod had been on the horse. His heart began to sink, as Ichabod slowly crept over a hill, as did the stranger following him. Now more visible, he was stunned with horror as this large man was outlined by the little light offered from the night sky. The stranger was wrapped in a cloak, but after a steady glance, he noticed that the stranger had no head. The head of the stranger sat in front of it, strapped to the saddle. With no hesitation, the horse began darting towards Ichabod in a frenzy. Ichabod stretched his body forward in eagerness to get the horse to gallop as fast as it could. In a stressing state, the road had split off and Ichabod knew one led to nowhere while the other would lead him home, although it would be only a quarter of a mile when he would encounter the haunted bridge and beyond would be the green hill where stood the church. Still fighting to escape the chase, Ichabod then noticed the saddle started to break and slipping from under him. He remembered that making it over the bridge may save him, as it was Brahm had escaped the headless horseman in his story. Just then, after making it over the bridge and assuming his pursuer had disappeared, Ichabod turned to see the horseman hurling his decapitated head at him. Ichabod was struck in the head, sending him backwards into dust. The next morning had came, and the horse Ichabod rode to the Van Tassel party with had been found without his saddle eating grass at his master's gate. Ichabod had not come to breakfast that morning. The children came to school, but Ichabod had not shown up, and dinner time rolled around, and still Ichabod was nowhere to be found. After the day had gone by, the man Ichabod had been staying with did a little investigating, and by the church's bridge, he found the saddle trampled in the dirt. Further up, he found what was Ichabod's hat on the ground, and beside it, a shattered pumpkin. The brook was searched thoroughly, but Ichabod's body was never found. Gossip had fled through the town of Sleepy Hollow. They had concluded that Ichabod had been the victim of the headless horseman. As Ichabod had no family anyone knew of or anyone to care for him, the townspeople slowly began to forget about Ichabod's disappearance being nothing more than a folktale, and the schoolhouse would be moved and they would find another teacher. Long after, a settler made his way to New York telling the story of Ichabod and the headless horseman, but claimed that Ichabod was still alive and left the town in shame. With no proof, little believed the settler. Brahm would go on to marry Katrina not long after Ichabod Crane's disappearance, and at the mention of Ichabod, Brahm would laugh, leading some to believe Brahm knew more than he was leading on, although the residents of Sleepy Hollow never doubted that the spirit of Ichabod was taken by the headless horseman. Although I did cut some parts out of this tale, the key details remain and the story of the legend of Sleepy Hollow remains an American folktale told in various versions, which of many are familiar with Disney's take on the tale, or the 1999 Tim Burton version starring Johnny Depp and Christina Ricci. Some versions describe the headless horseman to be a dead Revolutionary War soldier that had his head decapitated in battle to a cannonball, and roamed the Sleepy Hollow Cemetery each night in search of the missing head, keeping a pumpkin by his side to use as a lit lantern. Though many believe the myth of the Headless Horseman stems from American fiction, the entity actually dates back to Irish folklore. This would explain Washington Irving's fascination of hearing his parents' Irish spooky folktales as a young kid. In Irish folklore, the headless rider is known as the Dullahan. The Dullahan is depicted as a headless rider, not a headless rider looking to kill, But legend says if you see one, it is a warning that you or someone you love will soon die or will suffer a terrible tragedy. The Dullahan first appeared in 19th century collections of Irish texts. The Night Rider can be seen as a male or female and often travels on a horse that is also headless. While its presence is a terrifying forewarning, it often does carry a long whip it uses to whip out your eyes and attempt to blind you. Its decapitated head is found with it either strapped to its saddle or in its hand. Back in the time of the 19th century, some would claim to have seen these headless night riders chasing frightened village people out of town, bowling with their own skulls to trip anyone that ran away, and even riding carriages with other headless passengers. Those that encountered this presence would see carriage wheels made of human thigh bones. The carriages themselves would be held together with human skulls, and whips would be made of human spines. While this is all very terrifying, the Irish folk legend stresses that they are an entity of death just as comparable to the Grim Reaper. The tales of these legends are thought to have stemmed from the barbaric treachery Irish Celts would cause on others. They first appeared in the early Iron Age around 1200 BC in Austria when they would decapitate and preserve the heads of slain enemies to dehumanize them, believing the head is where the soul was located, damaging their spirit. Evermore, some archaeological evidence showed signs of people in the Stone Ages buried decapitated with horses and other animals that were also decapitated laying in a grave together, as well suggesting this may be where the folklore of the Dullahan stems from. Well, that brings us to the end of this episode. I again thank you all for listening. I strongly recommend taking a trip to Tarrytown and Sleepy Hollow, New York, and taking in all of its rich history. You can see the Headless Horseman Bridge, the church from the story, and check out Washington Irving's Sunnyside home overlooking the Hudson where he eventually passed away. Please do not forget to like and subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast, and have a happy Halloween. I'll see you next when the light goes out.